Well, so lovely to have a time of praise and worship and feel like, you know, we're just so prepared, aren't we, to hear God's word. And I have a deep sense that God has something very important to say to at least some of us this morning. I have, as you might expect, prepared quite carefully. But what I'm going to say to you this morning is not set in stone. I've got some notes here. My prayer is that God would direct and guide, because there's a bunch of things that I think are going on this morning here. It's Palm Sunday. We've got this fantastic passage to look at in Luke 6 in just a moment. But there's the deeper work of God in our lives. There's that deeper sense of God's presence in your life and in my life. There's that sense in which we come having something of life squeezed out of us. We come incomplete. We come in need of God's presence, of restoration, of His touch in our lives. We're going to read in a moment about a man with a withered hand who came to Jesus. And my prayer this morning is that each one of us might see the withered parts of our lives in a clearer sense and see the difference that Jesus could make to them as we encounter Him, the Lord of the Sabbath, this Sabbath day. Let's turn in the scriptures to Luke chapter 6 then. A number of years ago, I was caught out. I was over on the west coast, climbing some mountains over a weekend, and I let the petrol get quite low on my car. And I don't know if you've ever been in that situation, over on the west coast of Scotland, on a Sunday, with your fuel gauge getting quite close to the empty mark. Kept thinking, here's a petrol station, be all right. Pull in, closed. Drive a bit further. And just when we were running on fumes alone, somewhere about, I think, halfway towards Inverness, halfway across, is where the godless recommence. And I breathed a sigh of relief, probably wrongly, that I could actually purchase fuel on a Sunday. Why do I tell that story? For some people, the Sabbath day and this idea of Sabbath keeping is still a very special thing to be marked. And I don't want to make light of it, because it's obviously done with serious intent. Just as my parents were quite serious with me when I was a little child, and just in the sense that the tradition that they'd come from, it was important to impress upon us as children how important it was to observe this day as special. And I remember as a child having Sunday toys, special toys that were, maybe they weren't so rowdy or noisy, I don't know, but they were somehow set apart, kept apart for a special day. And it was a day that was marked, and I must admit, as a child, I wasn't that enthused by it. It seemed to be quite restrictive. I didn't find much that brought me life. Sometimes I felt that way. I think what we run into so often when we talk about the Sabbath and Sabbath keeping is this problem of legalism. Legalism. That we take a good thing and we make so many rules around it that it turns into something that actually becomes constrictive, restraining, Instead of giving us life, it sucks the life out of us. And that's the situation that we encounter in Luke chapter 6. Let's turn there and read from verse 1. I know we covered it last week, but I just wanted to recap over verse 1, because really the story in verse 1 to 5 is connected very closely to the story in verses 6 to 11, which is the one I'm going to focus on. But I want you to get the context. In each of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, these are connected. So let's just read from verse 1. On a Sabbath, while Jesus was going through the grain fields, his disciples plucked and ate some heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands. But some of the Pharisees said, "Why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath?" And Jesus answered them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priests to eat, and also gave it to those with him? And he said to them, 'The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath.' On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And a man was there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath, so that they might find a reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, 'Come and stand here.' And he rose and stood there. And Jesus said to them, 'I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm? To save life or to destroy it?' And after looking round at them all, he said to him, 'Stretch out your hand.' And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus." I think this passage is important because I think it tells us something about Jesus, but it also tells us something about Sabbath and this idea of Sabbath keeping. And we need to unlock the context a bit. We need to just look at the context in order that we can unlock what this actually has a meaning for us in this time and day. What was the Sabbath all about? Let's just have a look at that and what the Bible teaches us about this idea of Sabbath. Because obviously, this incident with Jesus was all tied up with an understanding of what was the Sabbath. The Sabbath day was the one day in the 7 days that was different, that was to be lived out in a different way. And the Jewish people practiced this as something that was very central and sacred to their faith and to the faith that they had. It was, in a sense, rooted way back in creation. It was a day to rest, a day of rest. It was a day that was marked by imitating God's rest. Because on the seventh day, the seventh day of creation, the 6 days that God had been so busy, in a sense, creating all that there was, on the seventh day, in the story that's told to us of creation way back in Genesis, God rested. God sat back and just simply enjoyed his creation. He reflected upon it. And in Exodus, where we're told for the first time the Ten Commandments of God, we're told the reason why we should practice this Sabbath day, why it's important for one day in seven to mark this day as different. Remember the Sabbath day. Keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, the sea and all that's in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy. So here is a day to remember. Remember the Sabbath day. Remember, it's a day of imitation as well. A day to copy God. Do what God did. Rest. This is important. It's important. It's fundamental to our being. God has made us to take this pattern into our days. One day in seven, stepping back, resting, taking stock of the world around us, reflecting on His presence, enjoying His gifts. So we have plenty then to remember. But, you know, there's another reason that the scriptures give us for Sabbath keeping. And that was rooted in what later happened to the people of Israel. Because they were once slaves in Egypt. There was once no opportunity for them to have this one in seven pattern. They were made to work every day, all day of every day. The taskmasters were hard and severe and took much out of them. Life, in a sense, was drained away from them. And like slaves in every age, they were simply used as things, objects, for the benefit of their masters. And when they were wasted and lifeless, they were cast aside, thrown away. And so it is that Deuteronomy, when we receive another listing, the second time that the Ten Commandments are listed to us, interestingly, the only one that is altered in any way is this commandment about the Sabbath. And we find that the reason for it is different in Deuteronomy than it is in Exodus. Exodus chapter 20, Deuteronomy chapter 5. And in Deuteronomy chapter 5, we find it written like this. So instead of remembering the Sabbath day, we're asked to observe the Sabbath day. Keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock or the sojourner that is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So here is another reason. The reason is not so much of imitation of God, but remembering that you don't have to work every day because God has given us freedom. God has given us liberty. That we can stop work, not because we're finished, but in full flow, we can actually stop the work that we're doing in order to understand that our work isn't the only thing that's going on in the world. That God is giving us a break. That here we have the freedom that's given to us, a gift. And rest is, in a sense, a condition of liberty. Sabbath is a refusal to go back to the land of Egypt. Helpfully, I found this week. The Exodus command, with its call to imitation, plays on a hidden irony. We mimic God in order to remember that we are not God. In fact, that's a good definition of Sabbath, imitating God so that we stop trying to be God. We mirror divine behavior only to freshly discover our human limitations. Sabbath keeping involves a recognition of our own weakness and smallness, that we're made from dust, that we hold our treasure in clay jars, and without proper care, we break. Deuteronomy calls us to observe the Sabbath. Why the variation? Well, the rabbis used to say that the 3 days that follow the Sabbath are spent upon reflection on the Sabbath that has just passed, remembering. And the 3 days leading up to the Sabbath are spent in preparation, observing the one approaching. In other words, the Sabbath makes claims on all our days. and they make none on it. Well, this Sabbath day then was a place to find rest. It was a sacred space. It was a set apart space, a deliberate ceasing of doing in order to find God. There was a stopping doing of what we ought to do in order to get the benefit of what God wanted to give to us. This kind of rhythm that's bound up to who we are, to how we're made, to how we function. And in a sense, this setting apart of one day was a statement of faith. It was a statement of dependence. It was a statement of worship. It was a statement of rest in God alone. The problem has been that the gift becomes a law. And the law involved defining boundaries. And the boundaries focused on the externals. And the internals were missed out. That outward practice became what was demanded rather than the inward attitude. And the thing, my friends, is this. You will never be able to experience the Sabbath of God without a Sabbath heart. You can't come to God for His rest unless you own that rest for yourself. Unless you come to Him. You miss the point because you'll never be able to enter the Sabbath day without the Sabbath heart. And that's just the problem of the scribes and the Pharisees. They'd made so many laws to make sure that they would not contravene God's holy law. So they had set a law ahead of themselves so that they could say, well, no, this was right and that was wrong. This was the way to go and this was not what they should do. And they had made so many laws that what was supposed to give them life, in fact, was draining life out of them altogether. And the people of God, as they came together on the Sabbath day, were not finding the presence of God restoring them. They were not encountering the Lord of the Sabbath on His day, but instead they were finding that simply it reinforced that dryness of their lives. As they read the word, it condemned them. As they read the law, it pointed out the faults and follies of their hearts. Perhaps they often left feeling worse than they came. I hope that's not true for here in Hillview. If we practice because of law, we end up with legalism. If we practice because of conviction, if we practice because something's changed inside, we find liberty. And those two are very, very different things. It's not this commandment in regard to the seventh day. It is not an easy command to keep, not least for us pastors, I can assure you. It's a difficult one because we have to find time other than this day to practice what we're speaking about here. This time of rest in God alone. I found this book very helpful, by the way, if you want to read some more things that might help you understand that it's not just all about Sundays or even a particular day, but this attitude of heart. This book by Mark Buchanan, The Rest of God, is an incredibly helpful book for understanding Sabbath and Sabbath keeping and what it means in the busy lives that we live. I'm not going to say too much more about that because I want to come specifically to the parable that we're looking at this morning. It's in the context of Sabbath that Jesus has this encounter with the people here in the synagogue. Let's have a look then at the parable. This is in the context then, verses 6 to 11 are in the context, and the reason I wanted to read those first verses are because they're in the context of Jesus' explosive claim in verse 5. The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. You know, this is incredible stuff that he is saying to the first century Jewish mind. The Son of Man, He Himself, is the Lord of the Sabbath. Who was the Lord of the Sabbath? But Jehovah Himself, God, the one who gave them the Sabbath. He was the one, the Creator was the one who'd given the Sabbath. And now Jesus is here as a mere man claiming to be the Lord of the Sabbath. This is explosive stuff. And so he enters the synagogue on the Sabbath day in order to teach, much in a similar context to this. And as he gets up there, it's a bit of a setup. A man with a withered hand has been placed on the front row. Much like Ian is stretched out with his knee there. And the thing is, people know Jesus' reputation. Will he respond to this poor situation? How will he respond? What would he do? And Jesus is anxious in this story to redefine what the law is saying, what these scribes and Pharisees are saying in their legalism, the way that they're bleeding life out of the commandment of God that is supposed to give restoration and life. And the thing that he wants us to understand is that the Sabbath only becomes worthwhile when we encounter the Lord of the Sabbath on the Sabbath day. Like, it's all very well you going off and having a rest. It's all very well you going off and meditating and reflecting. And it's all very well you going and having a wander in the fields. But unless you encounter the Lord of the Sabbath, you'll never be restored. You'll never know the life that he has for you. He wants to reach out to you on the Sabbath day. And they put so many laws and restrictions in place that there was never a chance they were ever going to meet the Lord of the Sabbath. In fact, they had specific reasons not to meet him. And they were so determined that it wasn't Jesus. They'd actually even set up this test. Here is a man with a withered hand. What would Jesus do? What can be done on the Sabbath day? And Jesus, they don't have to say a word. He sees the situation, he knows what's going on, and he responds to that situation very, very clearly. He says, I know your thoughts. I know what you're thinking. What is right to be done on the Sabbath day? It's interesting, there are two other places that this parable appears. It's obviously really important for us to take on board. If you look in Matthew chapter 12, you'll find the same parable given to us again with slight variation. There's slight things, changes to what Jesus says. In Matthew, he says, which one of you has a sheep, if it falls to a pit on the Sabbath, will not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more value is a man than a sheep? So it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And then again, in the Gospel of Mark, in chapter 3, Jesus once again speaks to in a slightly different way. He says, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or do harm, to save life or kill? It is quite similar, again, to this passage that we're reading here, which in Luke chapter 6, he says here to the man, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or harm, to save life or to destroy it? You see Jesus' intent? What's it for? What's the Sabbath for? Is it to suck the life out of you? Is it to shut everything down? Is it to make sure that life becomes more difficult, constrained? And you feel lifeless? Or actually is this day a day for giving life, making life, restoring life? In fact, in Mark, there's this amazing statement that Jesus makes at the end of chapter 2, where the linked story comes just a little bit before. So in Mark chapter 2 and verse 27, he says, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Like, the point of it is for us. It's a gift from God. But it only is his gift as we encounter him within it. In fact, Mark tells us something interesting, another layer on this story, because it tells us that when Jesus saw what it was that they were doing, when he became aware of the setup that had been played on him, it says in Mark's gospel, he looked around with them, Mark chapter 3, verse 5, he looked around at them with anger. It's one of the very few places it tells us that Jesus was angry. And he was angry because he was, it says, grieved at their hardness of heart. And here's why I think he was grieved at their hardness at heart. They had set up this man, they put him on the front row with his withered hand. They knew that in Jesus encountered this man, he was likely to heal him. They actually believed that Jesus would heal this man. And yet they wanted to use that miracle to undermine Jesus. They wanted to claim that Jesus had done work on the Sabbath, broken the law of God, and so condemn him. And so Jesus was grieved at their hardness of heart. He was angry that they'd missed the whole point, this point of meeting the Lord of the Sabbath on the Sabbath day, of knowing restoration and wholeness. Of course Jesus would heal that man. Of course he would bring him restoration. He couldn't let a man with a withered hand go away from his presence on the Sabbath day without knowing the restoration of God. And my friends, listen. If you've come here today with a part of your life withering away, with dryness in your soul, with an emptiness in your being, the Lord Jesus doesn't want you to go away. He doesn't want you to leave with that same dryness, that same emptiness, that same bleakness of soul. Your life can and will be transformed as you encounter the Lord of the Sabbath, as you encounter him on his day, the day that he gave for restoration, for wholeness, for life to flow to you. So Jesus, back in Luke, but also in Mark 3 and in Matthew 12, does a very clever thing. He does a very clever thing to this man. He simply says, "My friend, stretch out your hand." Now that man could have said, "But Lord, it's withered. I've never been able to move it for years. I've not been able to do anything with my hand." But when the Lord of the Sabbath asks you to respond to his life-giving power, he doesn't even need to touch. He doesn't need to do anything that the Pharisees and the scribes, these legal people in the world around us that are there to keep watch, he doesn't have to do anything that's going to contravene them. He doesn't even have to touch that man. As the man responds, his hand is restored. It's in a sense a command that's impossible to fulfill, but the only way to be healed. Verse 10, "Stretch out your hand," and he did so, and his hand was restored. What's the Sabbath for? The Sabbath is for restoration, for wholeness. This is the day to meet the Lord of the Sabbath, to respond to him as he brings life to dry places, as he restores the withered and the broken. Now there's a number of responses here, right here in this passage that we can see. How do we respond to Jesus? How can we respond to Jesus? Well, there's a number of responses. We can obey like that man. Just do what he says. Stretch out your hand. "Yes, Lord." It's healed. It's restored. It's made whole. Or we can respond like the crowd. Just a few verses later, in verse 17 and 18 and 19, it says, "The crowd that were around him sought to touch him, for power came out from him and healed them all." There was a kind of a buzz about Jesus, they recognized that there was something very special about him. These same crowds that welcomed Jesus into Jerusalem on another Sabbath day, on that Palm Sunday, that Palm Sabbath day, welcoming him to their city. Welcoming him because of power and because of healing. And they can respond. So like the crowd, we can respond in worship. We can respond in awe. Or there's another response, like that of the scribes and the Pharisees, who were just enraged. Enraged. In fact, it tells us in Mark that this incident unified opposing enemy camps of Jesus' enemies. So people who are politically very, very separate came together in a unified cause of seeking to plot against Jesus. Because of this incident, they were filled with fury. Who was Jesus and what was he claiming to be? My friends, I want to bring this to an end because I want there to be time for response. The Sabbath, this 1 in 7 command, this 1 in 7 command that was carried through the weeks and even the years of God's people's life together, was important. It was an important point for them to stop what they were doing, focus on God's life-giving power, and step back into their weeks restored and whole, taking that power of God back into them, realizing that it wasn't them, they weren't the only people at work in the world, that God had gifted them with rest and restoration and strength and everything else. Recognizing that the Sabbath brings life to withered places. And now, here is our opportunity. This Palm Sunday, to decide how we're going to respond to Jesus. It's wonderful, isn't it, to worship. And we were praising God in song earlier, and it was just wonderful. We said some wonderful things together about the presence of God. But now we have the opportunity. We're going to have some folk up the front here in just a few moments as we respond in song at the end of our time together in praise. We're going to have some folk here who are here to pray for you, to pray with you. And the invitation this morning is to bring those withered spaces, those withered parts of your lives to Jesus, to bring them to Him and allow others to minister something of His grace and truth to you through prayer, such that the healing and restoration of God comes through. Remember that for the man with the withered hand, the healing came in response. In response. Jesus didn't even have to touch him. He just had to obey. What command, what instruction of the Lord do you need to obey to find the rest of God, to encounter the Lord of the Sabbath on this Sabbath day? Let's come before Him now. And just be mindful as you think about it, as you seek Him, as you allow Him to minister to your hearts, as you allow this Lord of the Sabbath to encounter you this day, just respond. Respond to the prompting of His Spirit. And anything at all that moves you, come forward and we'd love to pray for you. There'll be some people here at the front ready to pray. If they're already filled up with people praying for folks, I just ask you to sit on the front row until one of them's free, and then come and pray with somebody up here at the front. So Mike is going to come, and Janet, I think, and Dawn is going to come, and Colin is going to help out as well. And we're just going to be available up here to pray with you as the Lord leads you and Martin leads us through a time of response. Thanks, Martin.